This is Coffee at KYUK, conversation between friends and neighbors. Come in and have a cup.
Good morning and welcome to Coffee. I'm Samantha Watson and I'm here in the studio at KYUK with our Riverwatch team for what I believe is our final update. I'm here with Mike Ottenweller and Laura Havemeister. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. And so this is kind of an exciting time of the Yukon River breakup because I heard you use the word flush earlier. Could you tell us a little bit about the stage that we're in right now?
Yeah, for sure. So yesterday, which was Tuesday, it all kind of blends together when you've been in the field for lots of days in a row. But yesterday, Tuesday, we watched down by Nunamiqua and Alaknak and Amanak. We watched the very last little bit of the ice run that was at one point 40 miles long, and maybe even if you go back a couple weeks, 90 miles long at some points. But we watched that clear out to the coastal areas and past those last villages and making its way out to the Bering Sea, where it will die a slow death over the next few months. But it was all good news. From the communities as of last evening. So water levels dropping in all those communities, which was great.
Amazing. And yeah, I know we had spoken about it a little bit earlier, but there was kind of talk of, you know, maybe the sea ice holding on a little bit longer or maybe that playing a role in how this river broke up. But in those kind of final moments of that ice moving through, did that sea ice play a role or was it everything as expected?
So it was a little bit of both, yes. So we were very concerned early on in the breakup season, you know, late April, early May, that we potentially might have what we call shore fast ice, which is the ice that forms over the winter months and binds itself to the coastal shoreline. We were concerned that that ice would hold long enough for the Yukon ice to make it, and then there would be no space for that Yukon ice to clear through. But when Laura and I were able to fly, oh gosh, the last several days, but we flew with some of the local search and rescue members from Amanak, and we flew that coastal area when the weather cooperated. We had a couple days where the weather did not cooperate and we had to take some evasive maneuvers. But when the weather cooperated, we were able to get eyes on with those individuals, and everything on the coast looked deteriorated. There was some things that they called sandbar ice. We also looked at the ridge ice, which is what forms right on the coastal, right on the shoreline area. All that looked quite deteriorated. But even though that was the case and that was good news, what we ended up seeing at some of those places, specifically with the Quiguk Pass near Amanak and the Alaknak Slough, just the sheer volume of ice and high water that came down ended up kind of getting stuck on some of the sandbars there as it got a little bit more shallow near the coast. And there was still enough ice and those sandbars to kind of interplay and cause things to continue to slow down, jam at periods of time, and then it would find its way through another, you know, smaller tributary, smaller creek, and then eventually would make its way out. But we did have some intermittent jamming is kind of how we referred to it for the last couple days. And I think looking back, and we were just talking about this with the National Weather Service this morning, looking back, I think we were very grateful that that shore fast ice and the ice over the Bering from the winter did decay and rot, and that they had some rain out over those communities the last few weeks, warm rain that helped to melt the low elevation snow. I think a lot of those variables helped to make things as, you know, relatively smooth as they went, and as opposed to you know, a serious flooding situation.
Yeah, and you know, I we spoke on air last on Saturday, and I was wondering if you could kind of just, you know, we've been posting these updates, but just for folks to know, like a little like Cliff Notes version of how things played out from, you know, I remember, you know, flooding had receded Holy Cross, and that was, you know, quite a bit away from the coast. It just seems like a very speedy rush to the end. Like what were kind of the, how did this ice behave, and how were communities affected in these last, 3 days, 4 days? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can speak towards the communities and how they were affected. We were able to, after we went and flew to Holy Cross and Russian Mission, I was so happy to land and speak to them before the flooding actually occurred, and I was really impressed how everybody was prepared for that flooding in that community, both those communities. And then we flew down to Pilot Station and to St. Mary's, and they did have flooding this year, and it was great to talk to the locals, and they would explain, oh, we haven't seen this since, you know, 1989, or just the historical value of that was very helpful. Water did come up. So far, we've received no reports of inundation in St. Mary's, but unfortunately, in Pilot Station, there were some homes in that old town that did get flooded. We don't have a number yet, but we are working with local contacts, and they're feeding us so much valuable information. As we went down to Emonic, Alakanuk, and Nunum, Emonic and unfortunately Alakanuk did see some flooding on the roadways. We were trying to land in Emo yesterday, but we could not make it into town, unfortunately, just because of that flooding. So we're working with the city manager and with the SAR team to really understand those inundation areas. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And as we worked our way, kind of the evolution of from the hydrologic side of things, what we saw basically was that jam at Holy Cross was able to kind of allow the high water that we knew was behind it, that we saw a little bit at the Koyukuk interface with the Yukon. As that high water caught up in that jam, all kind of combined, that's what we saw eventually when that released. I think that was Thursday that released. Last week, almost a week ago, and we landed there on Friday with the Air National Guard. But following that combination of high water and ice downstream was really our objective from the Riverwatch side of things. And so we did that through all those communities that Laura just mentioned. But that's what the combination of high water and the heavy ice run just was overwhelming in the Yukon network that allowed the flooding to happen in Pilot Station and St. Mary's. One of the interesting and kind of, you know, remarkable things that we witnessed in St. Mary's was when we landed there Sunday, I believe it was, the Andreevsky, the ice and the water were flowing upstream at about four to 5 miles per hour. That was pretty unusual to see. The Yukon was still flowing downstream, but the Andreevsky was flowing upstream. And ultimately, that's what caused the high water and the flooding in St. Mary's. So, yeah, pretty remarkable. And then, you know, we followed it, of course, down from there. And past Mountain Village, of course, there's not really, other than some fish camps, there's not a lot of, you know, populated areas all the way down to Emonic. But the acceleration was remarkable of the breakup front as it got past, you know, roughly 25 miles downstream of Mountain Village. There was a space of open water that was maybe 5 to 10 miles long, and once it hit that open water, it all kind of combined force and was just moving downstream. So overnight, I want to say it was Sunday into Monday, overnight that night, you know, where we had been clocking it maybe at 1.4 miles per hour for the previous 2 days, that night it moved 30 miles. So
wow.
Just really impressive, and that's ultimately what then got to Emonic on Monday and Tuesday. So yeah, pretty. Just, I mean, every Riverwatch is remarkable, but, you know, when you watch the power of the Yukon play out with your own eyes, it's a sight to behold.
Absolutely, and it's just amazing how breakup, like, what is actually, what each community is experiencing is so different from timing and from all the puzzle work of sloughs, thawing, and everything. It's just, it's a collective experience because everyone's connected by this river, but it's just so, like, almost personal, like, I feel like, to each community. So, and then, as you know, just as of today, I know you were saying that there was some flooding in Emonic. I'm imagining because that ice cleared out, has flooding receded in all these communities, or what's kind of the status as of this morning?
Sure. Yeah. So we heard from our observers in Emonic this morning and a little bit from Alakanuk, still communicating with them. But it sounds like waters continue to recede in those areas. Still water over roadways in some spaces on the way to the airports. So that's kind of what we're waiting for, that to come all the way down. But much like Pilot Station, because of the extent and the, really the extent of the high water, it takes a little bit of time for it to recede entirely. But yeah, when we flew yesterday, kind of early afternoon around 1 o'clock Tuesday, that's where we saw the Alakanuk Slough and the Quiguk Pass were still stuck, were still jammed up. And those are the two places that we had some residual concerns. But they effectively flushed last night out to the Bering, and that really then, I mean, we got reports from the locals there that water, that the ice was just, you know, flying past. In Nunum, when we were there, we were able to touch base with a local who had driven his four-wheeler, And he told me the ice was moving at 14 miles per hour. And I was like, how in the world do you know how fast the ice was moving?
Did
you, do you have a radar gun or something, you know? And he's like, no, I drove my four-wheeler at the same speed as the ice, and it was 14 miles per hour. And I was like, that is incredible. And that is also accurate.
Yeah.
you wonder, like, I've watched the ice move in Eagle from Dawson. And you wonder at Newnham as it goes out to the ocean, is this the same ice that was up there, you know, flowing past us and trees and logs, and everybody's trying to get the logs out, and it's just amazing to witness. So it was a joy.
Yeah. And I want to ask kind of in our last few minutes here, like, it's, you know, hearing you talk about this, like, it's this big production. It takes so many hands, but, you know, so much of what you do is coordinating with these communities and stopping in them. And I'm just curious, like, this season, are there moments that stood out to you, or any kind of takeaways when you're now wrapping up this Riverwatch season?
I just want to say thank you to all the leaders of these communities being so open, and this coordination starts months before we even do this. They will come and pick us up at the airport. They will take us on tours of their village. We get to go down to the river and meet aunties and elders and children, and it's fun to see the children's eyes just get big because this is new for them, or they haven't seen it, and then the elders tell their stories of what they saw in the past, and they share local knowledge with us and how to pronounce their communities, which we struggle at sometimes. But it's just very powerful, that community aspect, and they invite us in and they share with us and they treat us almost like family. So it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think a few moments that stood out to me were just like, even though the water was rising in so many places and there were concerns, and here comes Riverwatch in this little red plane and we're landing, and does that mean bad news? Everybody was like so well prepared, and they knew what to do, and they took the appropriate action. And that just like puts us, you know, at ease, because they're ready and they're tracking on it, and they've got boats that they can use if it does flood across the roadways. And we saw a couple four-wheelers that probably, you know, took on a little bit more water than they wanted to, but you know it's what happens. But just connecting with those leaders, like Laura said, and the communities, and having them welcome us in, even if it's just for one stop or if we're there a couple days in a row. And then, of course, I think it's always really special when we get to fly with the locals and they can do updates to their communities, and especially if they speak in their native language to their communities. And it, you know, helps to get more people informed of the information that we're just trying to disseminate as best we can from Riverwatch. But yeah, it's really great to get to fly. So I think this year we took up 5 different locals on our portion of the Riverwatch. Other folks flew at other times, I think, like yourself. Mm-hmm. Just amazing to get to hear their local knowledge of the area, because, of course, just like you said, there's so many small creeks and tributaries and channels and things that go into the entire Yukon Basin. So having their local expertise and knowledge is always a treat for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard it referenced, like, kind of in the language of the reports, especially in the earlier stages, going to break up through, you know, through National Weather Service as like ground truth or ground truthing, which is, I kind of love that term. And but I like as you're saying, even just as it's unfolding and somebody being able to drive their four wheeler at the same speed as the snow and get an accurate measurement, and you're that's so valuable, and you can't get that from the air. Imagine unless you like have a point to. It's some kind of monitor. Yeah.
No, in fact, it was actually Laura and I had many days where it was very challenging to even see if it was moving from the air, because the motion of the breakup front was so slow, and the plane is moving at 130 miles per hour. And, you know, depending if you're going upstream or downstream, it's really hard for your eye to discern movement at that speed. So it was, ground truthing that with people on the ground. And, you know, we fly over communities and I'm sending in-reach messages to folks on the ground. And that's just like verifies what we see and helps to build the model all the way through the basin, as opposed to just for one spot. So that's critical, of course.
Yeah. And just when you're looking at things overall, kind of in a recap mode, like I know we kind of anticipated things to be more dynamic this year with the cold winter. Like, as things played out, was there anything surprising, or if you were to give some adjectives to this year's breakup overall, now at kind of the end of this story, what comes to mind?
I think dynamic is what it was. Man, we had so many moments, you know, from a scientist perspective, I kind of nerded out a little bit on the hydrograph looking back at Eagle. We had so many moments where things were really, really close to coming together to being potentially major flooding or catastrophic flooding. And we kind of like that shore fast ice, or if we had combined the winter ice with the high water that came from Canada, there was just a lot of moments where we missed all the ingredients coming together within 24 hours. But then there were times where it did come together, like at Holy Cross and Pilot Station in St. Mary's. And, you know, that's unfortunate. But so definitely dynamic. And I think, you know, made our mission really special for us this year because it felt like we were able to track and provide the information and keep eyes on throughout. One thing that stood out to me that I thought was remarkable, and this is, again, only from local knowledge that we get from the people that are on the ground out there, the northeast winds that played out on Sunday and Monday were really what drove the ice run away from the middle mouth and the north mouth that would go up towards Kotlik and drove it towards Nunam and the southern area that goes out to the Bering Sea. And watching the ice take that preferential channel as opposed to going to the north was really due to those winds, we think. And of course, the speed of the flow, too, I think helped to push it that direction. But yeah, those northeast winds, and that's exactly what the local elders told us would happen. And it's just remarkable to see how all those things fit together to ultimately lead to what is spring breakup.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for coming on. I'm sorry we have to jump out here, but thank you for being the voice for Riverwatch through these updates the past couple of weeks. It's been just great to stay informed, and safe travels back.
Thank you, Sam.
This is Coffee at KYUK.